Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Daniel McAdams with me, the co-host. Daniel, nice to see you today.
Morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. We want to talk about the hotspots around the world and whether or not they're being de-escalated or are they escalating. And I think most people would realize that we at the Liberty Report would be looking to de-escalate military confrontations, since in recent years, I can't remember anybody attacking us, you know. So, but anyway, there's still a lot of hot spots around the world. And some of us, and we did to a degree, hope that things would de-escalate a bit, you know, with the new administration, because there were hints that maybe that would be the case. But it looks like it's not changing a whole lot unless it's getting worse, because there's a lot of spots that we want to mention. And also where we were most hopeful with Russia, that's as confused as ever, and the appointments don't indicate that necessarily that's going to go well either. But let me just mention a few things that is going on. In Europe, COM, which is our military operation in Europe, it's called Endorsing Armored. They see Russia as indeed a military threat, and they're asking for and demanding already moving armored divisions and all kinds of troops and so-called defense units with this preparation, which seems to be rather extreme. But then there's the NATO issue. We had heard some things in the campaign that NATO's not much of our friend, and therefore we shouldn't be doing much. But there was no hesitation to expand NATO, and now it looks like NATO's our friend because the tone has changed. And we'll just get them to pay us a little bit of rent and for our military, and we'll continue to do what we're doing. Syria, it seems like that's continuing, if not getting worse. There was just recently 33 casualties, civilian casualties. And it was, you know, from our bombing. And then there were some Marines put into Syria, and they were dropped behind the lines of ISIS, which sounds like they're getting pretty darn close. And I don't remember having Assad inviting our Marines in there. Mosul seems to be a mess and escalating, and there's civilian deaths there. Libya, it's been announced that the troops will stay. They're not about to bring them home because we're still very much involved in regime change there. And then even Somalia, which we don't talk about much and not many people will know much about it. There's an increase in military attacks by us. And then, of course, there's a hot spot called Yemen that we diligently are trying to defeat, one faction of a Yemen civil strife going on. So we're allied with, the civil rights leaders of the world, Saudi Arabia. So there's a few things. And, of course, there's antagonism frequently expressed toward Iran. There's antagonism frequently expressed toward China. So it seems like somebody thrives on this type of activity. So give me a little bit of hope. Where can we be positive about this? Or do you have more bad news?
Well, there's bad news everywhere, I'm afraid. And that's, when we were talking about the show, the theme was that there really is not a hotspot or potential hotspot anywhere in the world that this administration is not trying to escalate. There's nowhere where they're saying, let's talk this one down. Let's reduce the tensions here. But you mentioned Syria and Iraq, and that's pretty serious. I've got a graphic here that I'd like to put up because it's about civilian casualties, and that's the big issue here. And these are civilian casualties by the month. And you see in March of this year the enormous increase. Now, there are some contested. I suspect this map will be altered soon because the U.S. has admitted in Mosul, killing hundreds of people in a single airstrike. And actually, if we can keep that up, I have another little, this is something that Al Jazeera put up, and it's a quote. This is someone who survived this Mosul attack. And he said, "We know what an airstrike sounds like. They killed most of our neighborhood for one ISIL member, and they didn't even get him. I don't understand it." Terrible, terrible tragedy.
What a tragedy.
And drone strikes also up 432%.
Yeah. No, and they don't seem, and they do acknowledge it. One of the commanders acknowledged something, but it was sort of acknowledging, but no big deal. You know, that sort of attitude, which is can be aggravating to us, but you can imagine how aggravating it will be to the neighborhood who's on the receiving end of these bombs. And but I think it looks like it's going to get a lot worse, because I think Trump was up front about he didn't say he'd be a pussycat.
Yeah.
He said he was going to defeat him, and he'll go any place possible, and he has to defeat ISIS. Of course, if you really understand ISIS, ISIS represents probably a philosophic position more than a country's committing aggression. It's sort of like we didn't attack the Soviet system militarily, but it would have been like saying, well, if we find communists any place in the world, we're going to attack them. Yeah. And there were communists in every country, including our own country. So I think that's the big difference. So it's an endless task. I just don't see how this, how you can have an ideological struggle that's being expressed with violence solved with all-out war, with all this bombing and killing, which is an incitement toward more hatred and directed at us. I think it's such a deeply flawed policy.
Exactly. And I think really at this point, ISIS is becoming sort of a fig leaf for what is essentially U.S. military aggression and territorial aspirations. You know, you mentioned the airdrop of Marines into Syria, and this is a really important one, I think, because what the U.S. did is it airdropped Marines coming in between ISIS's capital, Raqqa, and the Syrian army, the legitimate army of Syria, that was advancing toward Raqqa to take back the city itself. The U.S. interjected itself in between the two and blunted the forward deployment, blunted the progress of the Syrian army, blocked them from taking their own city. And there's no question now that this is the beginning of the sort of detachment of parts of Syria to be controlled by the Kurdish YPG forces, which are de facto in control up by the border of Turkey. This is the partition of Syria. Otherwise, why would you put the Marines in there when the Syrian army is already winning?
You know, another way you can measure what's going on is who gets appointed to these important positions. There's been quite a few. And it was hard to sort out exactly what the foreign policy would be, you know, from the campaign, because it would shift back and forth. And there's still a little bit of shifting verbally. But if you look at the appointments, I think it's getting to be pretty consistent. It's escalation, it's conflict, there's more bombing, more militarism. But let's just go over a couple of these individuals that hold important positions. Probably the most important one would be the Secretary of State, you know, as well as DOD. But Tillerson, say a few things about him. I think his position on Korea is a little bit strong.
Yeah, I mean, and we'd had high hopes for him because he was the head of a large corporation that did business with Russia, suffered from the sanctions financially, his company did. So we had thought that he would be certainly in favor of better relations. But you're right, he went over to South Korea and said, everything's on the table to deal with North Korea. We're putting them on notice. They better stop their missiles and this and that.
And now, of course, that means that we would use a nuke on you, would be use it as a first strike.
Yeah.
That's what they're implying.
And then they say that he's paranoid.
Of course, Mattis is DOD, and he's important, and he's very hawkish, too. And it seems like these aren't people that we say, oh, he's just a Bill Kristol neocon. They're not exactly that, but in a way, it looks like they serve their interests. I don't think the neocons are as concerned about the appointments as we are, you know, because we see them not the same, but at least in the same corner.
In fact, there was an article out, I think, yesterday or the day before, mentioning that John McCain has Mattis's ear. They talk almost every day, article said.
Yeah.
So every day. So that explains why Mattis wants to increase our military presence in Yemen. He wants to increase everywhere. So he's McCain has his ear.
And also another position, it shouldn't have much legislative force, but it has big PR force. And who speaks for the United States at the United Nations?
Yeah.
And it turns out that Secretary Haley, you know, former governor of South Carolina, she has a pretty strong position with Russia, and it doesn't coincide with the president, at least the president during the campaign.
Yeah.
But then the question is, how did these people get there? But she certainly doesn't offer us anything or any hope, really.
This is a supposed to be a diplomat, Nikki Haley. She sat in her seat at the UN and said, never trust Russia.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, even if she felt that in her heart, you know, which would be bad enough, but this is not the kind of, this is not the way you pursue what, you're right, what candidate Trump said. Maybe the body snatchers came
They haven't gotten their ambassador to Russia, which will be very important. And it looks like maybe Huntsman might be appointed. And my guess is if he is, if he's requested to be approved, I think he'll probably win it because he's sort of pretty smooth. He's been ambassador and, you know, this sort of thing. But he's not exactly somebody that looks at foreign policy anywhere close to what we're talking about.
Yeah, and he's on record being very hawkish toward Russia, very suspicious of Russia. So, you know, and you look across the spectrum and there's not a single person who you feel will dial down the tensions. Everyone seems to want to turn them up to 11.
And we're talking about foreign policy, but an arm of foreign policy, which a lot of people don't think of it as an arm of foreign policy, and that's the CIA.
Yep.
So we have Pompeo, and he is sort of a militant too, and he's on the wild hawkish side. So the one thing interesting about Pompeo is that, you know, the use of drones, it used to be there was pretense of a little bit of coordination, but now the Pentagon's getting more authority to just sort of go on their own. And then you have the CIA who releases a lot of these drone missiles. So it'll be very interesting to see what's happening. Hopefully not some horrible unintended consequence occurs on this, but that doesn't help us either.
Yeah, Pompeo is extremely hawkish, and you're seeing, there's this ramping up of military action everywhere. The commander for troops in Afghanistan, we need a few thousand more. You know, we pumped it up to 100,000 under Obama in, I think, 2010, and this surge was going to finally win the war, and now we're going back, we're going to have to redo it again. As a matter of fact, Adam Dick at the Institute just had a good piece about Walter Jones, who's on our board, and he put in a bill saying no more money for Afghanistan. Completely cut off funds. He was on C-SPAN, and he talked about the cowardice of the fellow congressman and of Paul Ryan. Why won't you allow a debate? Why won't you allow us to talk about the longest war in U.S. history? You want to escalate it, and Congress is completely AWOL.
Well, this isn't a direct military escalation, but I think it's an escalation in tensions, and that has to do with the ambassador, our ambassador, going to Israel, who happens to have very, very strong opinion about the West Bank, the settlements, and sometimes it's a little bit in conflict with the president is saying, but also the capital, you know, where it should be in Jerusalem, and that doesn't go unnoticed when you think of what exists in the Middle East, and that may end up being a real problem because this has just happened that he's been appointed. But even there are, some Jews in Israel that question this. There are, you know, a significant number there that say, you know, maybe we shouldn't be in the face all the time of the settlements. And, of course, there wouldn't be very Muslim Arab countries that would be excited about this either.
Well, you know, candidate Trump, again, before the body snatchers took over, said we need to have an even-handed approach to Israel and Palestine conflict. Well, if that's the case, you wouldn't put someone like Ambassador Friedman in there, who's blatantly partisan in favor of one side. There's no question about it. So once again, you have increasing conflict, increasing tension, where the candidate promised to tone down the tension.
Okay, and then there's other places. We don't have time to get into this in detail, but the comments about Iran and connected with Yemen—that's a serious problem, and that's with us, and also with China. But we're you know, the long war in Afghanistan, that's going to continue. They want more troops there. You know, we were supposed to be winding that down. Didn't we have a victory there? We had a victory once in Iraq, but it just seems to go on and on.
You're right, and the commander is asking for more, step up U.S. military role in Yemen, more strongly back the Saudi war on the Houthi rebels. But this, again, is really not about Yemen. It's about Iran, because there's this canard that Iran is directly backing these Houthi rebels. And so if we beat them back, then we're going to give a black eye to Iran. But who is the greatest enemy of the Houthi rebels? It's Al-Qaeda, the people we're supposed to be fighting, who we mentioned in a previous show is greatly benefiting from the Saudi war on Yemen.
So that same tool is being used, the canard, you call it, against Russia, too. No matter what goes wrong, oh, it's Russia, it's Russia, yep. It's Russia. Whether it's the politics of it and the intelligence gathering, all these things, it's always thrown back there. And they do the same thing with Iran. And it's the last thing conceivable if you're interested in non-interventionism. But why don't we just quickly make a comment about the budget, because ultimately this has to be paid for. And technically, even if we slip and slide and plunge into all these things, the people still have a voice if they would speak out, because they could tell their congressmen, don't fund them.
Yeah.
And I remind people, that's how the Vietnam War ended. They finally said, no more money. So the people could have an influence on this. But right now, I think the special funding coming up, they're worrying about, well, you know, we're going over the national debt. We have to be very creative on funding. But guess what? I think the military will absolutely be protected with this escalation on funding.
Yeah, you can believe that, because you know, the money to the troops, maybe they'll cut that off, but they won't cut off the money.
So what's your take on all this?
Well, I have a little different take at the end this time. And my take is that all the things we've talked about here, we're going to be talking about at the symposium here in Lake Jackson in a couple of weeks. So all of this and more. I was on the phone with Jeff Deist of the Mises Institute yesterday, and he said there are still a few more seats left. Mm-hmm. So if you go to Mises.org and you look in their events section, you'll find out how you can sign up. Come down and see a symposium on foreign policy in the Trump era. David Stockman, Lou Rockwell, Ron Paul,
Massey.
Phil Giraldi, Thomas Massey, representative from Kentucky. It's going to be a very interesting event.
We can get more discussion on these very issues. You know, I think that it's important that we talk about this and we identify these hot spots. But I'm also one that's always my antennas are up thinking, what are we missing? Well, we're missing total knowledge of the future, because, you know, this afternoon something might happen. You know, like this morning there was a shooting in Washington. Probably not going to be a big issue, but things like that can happen, and they can get out of hand. So there's also the unknown.
Yes,
it could happen. But I want to remind people of what today is. It's a sad day because it's happened on March 29th in 1973. We removed our last troops from Vietnam.
Wow.
A couple of months before that, there was a so-called peace treaty signed, but it was only signed to save face for us to walk out, because we finally had it. The people had had it. The people would not support the war any longer, and we left. Actually, the war continued for 2 years more. We had a few people there, but we weren't involved. We'd quit the fighting, and the prisoners came home. But in theory, you know, there was going to be a peace treaty. But no, the North continued to fight. And 2 years later, in April of 75, they finally, you know, it was Saigon, the pictures of the last people, embassy, everybody leaving Saigon. And that was the end of that. So everybody thought, you know what's going to happen now? They were arguing the case that this would introduce the domino effect, and it would become totally communistic in that whole area. Turned out differently. It turned out that South Vietnam and North Vietnam get along together, and that a lot more was accomplished in peace than in war. We've been there for 20 years. The French had been there for decades as well. Millions of lives were lost, and we lost 60,000 men and women, and thousands more that were injured. And even I had, both in the Congress and in medicine, came across people who suffered from Agent Orange problems. And we never learned a lesson. You'd think they talked about the Vietnam syndrome, that we weren't going to get involved. That might have lasted for 6 months or something, but right now it doesn't exist. That is totally unknown. Look at where we are today. Instead of just needing to worry about what's going on in Vietnam or a few years before that in Korea, now we have 10 spots to worry about. We have the whole world, because we've told the world that we're going to go any place, any time when we think we're necessary to protect our interests. The trouble is that their definition of our interests has nothing to do with the American people's interests, their pocketbooks, their civil liberties, or their peace that they desire. It has nothing to do with that. National interest means the special interests of very wealthy people. Everybody come down from the banking system to the military-industrial system, and the people suffer. The middle class gets wiped out. Our liberties are destroyed, and this process continues. There's way too much escalation going on, and I would say in memory of that 1973, when we finally left Vietnam, we ought to think, maybe we ought to do that again. I had suggested in a campaign one time, and all these wars are still continuing. I said, we just marched in. It's time we just march out. And that is my suggestion, and maybe someday there will be people who will agree with that, and that would be very pleasing, because I think that is the step to go toward peace and prosperity, and not pretend that everybody is about to attack us with a nuclear weapon tomorrow, and therefore we have to, you know, perform all this militarism around the world. I do want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.